I'm coming your way live from Jerusalem, talking with Ron Cantor about ministry in Israel. It's not always as glamorous as you might think.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, this is always a special time, getting to come your way live from Jerusalem. I don't get to do this often. It's an amazing city. It's an amazing place to be for a thousand different reasons. You really have to be here and experience it yourself and live it yourself. But I'm delighted to be coming your way live from Jerusalem. Michael Brown, coming to the last few days of our Israel tour. We've had a great tour group, and it's just I'm stunned by how much is done in a short period of time and how much there is to see in the land of Israel. If you do have a question, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. But I want to introduce you immediately to a dear friend. We have been friends now for the vast majority of our lives. I'm 59, he is 49, but we have been friends now for 31 years, co-workers in the Lord, Ron Cantor. And Ron's lived here with his wife, Alana, now for
11 years.
11 years. Alana, native-born Israeli. In fact, I had the privilege of preaching the message when she came to faith in August of 1986. They got three great daughters, all of whom have either served in the military or are in the military. Now, Ron, you've been on the show with me before, sometimes by phone from Israel, sometimes in my studio, but this is the first time I'm in your place.
That's right. And welcome. We're glad you're here.
Great to be here with you, Ron. Hey, let me ask this. I want to talk as honestly as possible. Ron has a gift of making folks laugh, and sometimes we've had to push through some laughter on our shows as well.
I'm glad you're going to be honest tonight. Yeah, yeah. You talk as honestly as possible. I would expect nothing less.
You and I are... very optimistic. You and I always see the positive side of things. We're full of enthusiasm and faith. But I want to talk honestly about some of the challenges of living in Israel and ministering in Israel. If you had to begin to list them, all right, starting with the things think in your mind, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the greatest challenges, and you couldn't know them until you're actually living here in
right.
Israel. Let's start. We just got a little bit of time in this first segment. But let's get a picture, because I want to get prayer support for you and Alana and the work you're doing. My great goal on the show is not just to inform and teach, but to get prayer support for those living in Israel, laboring on the front lines.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is language. When you move here, I was 38 years old, and I had no idea that learning Hebrew was going to take me so long. I had my plan. I had taken off 2 years of ministry.
That's a lot of time. 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a long time.
Especially when I had been in full-time ministry, preaching ministry, and I had an identity, at least in my own heart, as a communicator, and then to be in a congregation for so long where people don't know who you really are. They don't know your gifts. They don't know your calling. And because when we moved here, we didn't tell people in our congregation that we had been in ministry. Obviously, the leadership knew, and we had submitted our lives to them. But learning the language probably has been the single greatest challenge of my life. And it took me not 2 years, but 7 years to begin to preach in Hebrew. And it's not just being able to preach in Hebrew. There are just all kinds of emotions of, I remember in one ulpan, that's a Hebrew school, where they call it ulpan, where we had to read articles written by people who were older immigrants, what they went through, how, you know, you're used to being thought of as smart. And, you know, when my kids were younger, I'm helping them in school. Uh-huh. I'm suddenly in a situation where I cannot help them in school anymore. I am a teacher, an instructor. This is what I do for a living, and I can't help them. They out-Hebrewed me in about 3 months.
All right, so there's a lot of emotion, not just with the language, but you are a communicator. You're called here to preach, to teach. That's who you are. You speak. Can't do it. You've overcome, man. And I always get a thrill when I see you in videos speaking in sounds like fluent, good Hebrew to me, even with an accent. All right. We'll be-
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. You might think, what is that with the hip-hop or Jamaican? What? Well, that's Matisse Yahoo. And he's talking about Jerusalem, and this is Michael Brown, and I am live in Jerusalem. We've got three folks from our tour group. We had 22 that came over with us Friday night at the Galilee Experience in Tiberias. We had three that traveled over with us, had to take a taxi over from the hotel to get to our location in Jerusalem, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm sitting here with my longtime friend and coworker, Ron Cantor, lived in the land now 11 years, together with his native-born believing wife, Alana, and their three kids. And I said a moment ago that a great goal I have on this show is not just to inform you about Israel, but to give you an idea of the challenges on the ground, ministering here, serving here. On the one hand, there's no place like Israel in all the positive senses of the word. On the other hand, there's no place like Israel in all the negative senses, in that there are great, deep, serious, unending spiritual challenges from almost every angle. So, Ron, you come over here, 38 years old. As long as we've known each other, we've both been talkers. We both had stuff to say, and you always preached and taught boldly without fear. Now you come over here, and suddenly you're like a child. You got to learn, here's the Aleph Beit, here's the alphabet, here's how you pronounce this.
And then when you just get enough courage, and I've always been somebody who's not been super self-conscious. I knew that in order to speak the language, I had to speak the language, which meant looking silly,
right?
Even to this day, to some degree. But you know, you finally get your confidence up, and you ask a question to somebody, and you have no idea what they say back to you.
Right, yes.
And you just shake your head. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Great. And so I went through many things like
and
that.
And for me, I just shut up then because my spoken Hebrew is not good. So I just avoid it. You know,
right.
If we're reading scripture, biblical Hebrew, great. So that you have to overcome that. You have to keep going.
Right. Well, imagine you're in conversations that you can't get out of. And so you have two choices, is to say, I don't understand what you're saying.
Every other sentence.
Or you just pretend, you just get tired of telling people you don't understand. So you just pretend like you understand. And then you hope that you respond accordingly. And it's not always the case. And then honestly, there are some real feelings of alienation culturally that you don't know necessarily what's going on. You watch the news, you don't understand. You are not laughing at the same jokes as everyone else. If you go to a party or a gathering and there's a group of people talking, it's emotionally difficult for someone who's a communicator,
right?
Really for anyone, that you can't just jump in. Now, I thank God that eventually, you know, my Hebrew constantly has gotten better and better, and it took me 7 years.
Yeah, you got to persevere, especially at this age and having been established in ministry already.
Right. And to this day, I meet people who come over when they're like just at a college or at a high school, and in 6 months or a year, their Hebrew's better than mine, and I just want to kill them. I don't, just to be clear, but that's the situation that I found. I came here at 38. After 7 years in front of 40 people, I preached my first message in Hebrew. And
what did you preach on?
I preached on, there's a word in Hebrew called, tit chadesh. We say it whenever you buy something. It's like, the best English translation would be renew yourself. So whenever you buy something at the mall, they say tit chadesh. If you buy something small or big, they say tit chadesh, and it's like renew yourself, like go enjoy. And I talked about how to renew ourselves in the Lord.
Neat. Yeah, and if I heard that, I'm always thinking, all my orientation is biblical or traditional Hebrew and in rabbinic literature and stuff. So the moment I hear something, I think, no, that means
right.
This. That, you know, I'd hear that and think, wow, what a spiritual word.
And I have a similar mind, not quite as smart as you, but in terms of the way that I think, I analyze the language. I didn't catch it like children,
right,
do. I learned
right,
it.
Right.
So I will often make up words based on what it should be according to the grammar. If everything's correct, this should be a word. And now those words come naturally. And 90% of the time, even though I've never used it as a word,
right,
it's a word.
Okay. When when did you start dreaming in Hebrew?
Well, I rarely dream in Hebrew, but I remember the first time I had a exclusively Hebrew dream, and it was about 6 months ago. David Broza is a very, very famous rock star here in he's a classical Spanish guitarist, but also he's an amazingly talented guy. And I met him in an airport in 1995 or something in Newark, New Jersey. I had no idea who he was. And we have this conversation for an hour waiting for our relatives to arrive. So I tell Ilana when we get in the car, I said, I just met some guy, a musician. David Broza, does that mean anything? Well, it turns out he's this crazy famous guy here. So I had a dream in Hebrew that I saw him again in Tel Aviv, and we were catching up, and we talked about how we met. It was all in Hebrew. And then I woke up, and I said, whoa.
Hebrew dream.
Hebrew dream.
All right, you got to mark that down. All right. Ilana, your wife, native-born Israeli, spoke Hebrew all of her life. And yet there are challenges for her here as a believer.
Well, you know, she came back here. She moved to America when she was a young adult. And she came back, I won't tell you how old she was, but I was 38, so you can say, imagine somewhere close to that. And she was really like a new immigrant because her entire adult life had been in America. But because culturally.
So she served in the Army.
Right.
And then after the Army went to America.
And became a believer, and we met and got married. So culturally and language wise, she's Israeli. So with immigrants, we receive a tremendous amount of grace from native Israelis because they know what you're going through. But Israelis can be very aggressive, tough people. And Ilana didn't get that same grace because they did. Well, you're Israeli.
Right.
And she, if anybody knows my wife, she's super gentle. And so that, you know, it hasn't been a completely easy time. At the same time, if you asked her, you know, do you want to go back to America? She would say, crazy. There's no way. This is our life. We love it here.
So paint a picture. Let's talk about the secular Israelis first. Every people group is diverse, and every people group has good points and bad points. But as far as the challenges, well, the good points of your average Israeli and the challenging points of your average Israeli.
Well, the good points is Israelis have big hearts. You know, one of the things that you've seen on your tour probably are the Sabra cactus plant. And the Sabra cactus plant grows a fruit, and it's prickly on the outside and sweet on the inside. And so we call native-born Israelis Sabras because Israelis are typically prickly on the outside, but once you get to know them, they'll give you the shirt off your back. And so on the positive point, if you need something, if you're genuinely in need, Israelis are incredibly helpful. They will fight to help you. I wrecked my motorcycle at one point, and the amount of people that stopped to help me, I was somewhat in shock and how they just took care of me. But those same people that were making sure I was okay, if I had met them in a different circumstances, such as
if you had cut them off with your motorcycle.
Right. Or they had cut me off, you know, things would have been different. We would have been yelling at each other. But one of the great things about Israelis is because it's in the Middle East, everything's very vocal. So two Israelis can be yelling at each other. And to your American mind, you think they're ready to fight.
Mm-hmm.
But after a minute of yelling, okay, so I'll see you tomorrow. Good. All right. Great.
Right.
You know, say hi to your wife. It's intense, but it doesn't have the same level of anger, genuine anger behind it.
Got it. But that can be off-putting to someone who's not familiar with the culture.
But it's great if you grew up your whole life
in New York.
Right. Or for me, where everyone was always telling you, you know, I would grow up ADHD and everybody's telling me grow up, behave. You know, here there's just a certain amount of freedom to just kind of be me. The first time I came here, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm in a country of ADHD people just like me. People push you. They don't push you. They bump into you. I used to joke that when you learn Hebrew and you bump into somebody at the Ulpan first week, you say, excuse me, because you're an English speaker, but you learned a little Hebrew. And then the second week, somebody bumps into you, say, slicha. So, you're learning a little Hebrew. The third week, you bump into someone, you don't say anything.
Right.
And then the fourth week, you bump into someone and you say, what's the matter with you?
Exactly.
So you learn culturally how to adapt.
So let's just take a minute because we've got a break coming up. I want to find out about what's happening spiritually and how people can pray most effectively. But you actually have a prayer call once a week where you ask people, stop this day, pray. Let folks know how they can get connected with you and about that prayer call to the nations?
Well, if you just can remember my name, Ron Cantor, that'll take you, you know, Google that. That'll take you to messiahsmandate.org. We ask people every week to take 5 minutes on Friday and pray for Tel Aviv. That's where our congregation is. I, along with my dear friend Asher Intrader, lead a messianic congregation called Tiferet Yeshua, the glory of Yeshua. So we ask people to pray. And if folks would like a, we have just produced a free ebook called The 15 Most Important Facts You Need to Know About the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. It's full of pictures and graphics and maps and links to videos. It's really informative, easy to read, and you can get that free. Just go to roncan.net/15facts. Make sure you capitalize the F.
All right, so here, just tell us one more time real quick.
roncan.net/15facts.
All right, we will be right back live from Jerusalem.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
How many songs, how many stories these stony hills recall. Around her heart my city carries.
It is the voice of Marty Goetz singing Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Jerusalem of Gold. As I come your way live from Jerusalem, been looking forward to this moment.
Marty frantically drove me to the rent-a-car place in Grantham, Pennsylvania at last year's Messiah's Conference. We had a great time. And he's not just a great singer. He is a really fun person to hang out with.
Yeah, and loves the Lord, knows the word. That is the voice of Ron Cantor, who jumped in without introduction.
Without permission.
Yeah, without permission or introduction. We are coming away live from Jerusalem. I was hoping that Alana, Ron's wife, would be able to join us, but they just moved. They just moved into a new location right in the midst of all the upheaval with it. So we just, Ron and Alana came, addressed our tour group tonight, and then Ron's with me this first hour on the air, and then I'll be getting into a lot of things the second hour. It is Memorial Day, and I do want to express my heartfelt appreciation
Amen.
To all of you listening who sacrificed for our country, for our freedoms, you yourself or through your family. We are indebted to you. Here in Israel, every young man serves for 3 years in the military, every young woman for 2 years. If you are ultra-Orthodox Jewish, then that's another subject that's actually being addressed and challenged these days. But our deep appreciation this Memorial Day, and a lot happened over the weekend. There was a lot of bloodshed in America. There was bloodshed in Belgium at a Jewish community center, and a whole lot of things to talk about. I'm going to get into that. The Pope here, we've missed each other. I mean, I don't mean being on the air. He's been busy. But just locations missed each other really just by hours, by design, because everything was shut down. I'm going to talk to you about a bunch of things that are going on in the second hour of the broadcast. But I want to get back to Ron Cantor. Ron, I noticed when we've gone out to get stuff to eat that prices would be higher than what we'd normally see in the States comparatively. Mm-hmm. I also know that your average Israeli makes less. Then you have taxes and things like that. So we're talking about challenges, moving here, living in Israel, serving the Lord here. Talk to me about the economic situation.
Well, you know, in terms of a country, Israel's one of the strongest economies in the world per capita. But that doesn't mean that the average Israeli gets to enjoy this prosperity. It's, you know, in America, they like to talk about the one percenters, but over here, it really is an issue. Because Israel was founded on socialist principles. And so in the 80s, late 80s, when the nation realized that socialism really isn't going to work and wanted to move towards capitalism, they had to sell off all of the major corporations that the country owned, like the telephone or banking industries. And so what happened is a few people who were already wealthy got sweetheart deals from banks in order to buy up enough of stakes in these industries, where now you have a situation where 15 to 20 families have about an 80% stake in most of the major industries in Israel. So
the Jews do control all the money within Israel.
Certainly in Israel. And it's just a few Jews on top of that.
Right, right.
And so your average Israeli, we don't really have much of a middle class anymore. It's getting smaller and smaller. So I remember, when I moved here, this may sound just silly, but there are things that I used to buy, like cottage cheese or, this we call it ficken, which is fake chicken. They're like chicken breasts, but they're vegetarian. And they're great because you could, and I just noticed that slowly over 10 years, for no reason, it's 25% more than it used to be. Same, we actually had a few years ago, the cottage cheese revolution, where people revolted. Cottage cheese is very important here in Israel. People eat it every morning for breakfast, and they finally said, it's ridiculous. There's no reason that the prices should be that high, other than the fact there's just a few companies that make it. So, you know, when you move here as a new immigrant, I really didn't understand how much – I don't know how the average Israeli makes it. I know how hard it is for us that we live on an American salary, and yet at the end of the month, I'm just – it's just gone. So, you know, when Asher Intrader used to say, if you're going to make Aliyah, if you're going to move to Israel, whatever you think you're going to need, multiply by 10.
What about if you buy a car? What about taxes?
Taxes on a car, I believe, is 18%. On just about everything, it's 18% sales tax, which is built into the price. How about a house? If you want to buy a house, we went through in the States where you could not only get a loan for 100% of the home, you could sometimes get a home for 110% of the home.
Right.
So you have 10% money to spend. In Israel, if you don't bring at least 30% down, you can't get a loan. And like where we live in Tel Aviv, just a simple three-bedroom apartment, decent apartment, would be $600,000-$800,000. So that means if we wanted to own a home, we'd have to show up at the bank with about $250,000, which we don't
and
have.
And your average Israeli salary is less than
yes,
American.
Yes, yes.
So definitely challenging. Again, what's the website if folks want to connect with you?
Messiahsmandate.org, or just go to roncantor.com.
All right. Easiest thing to do, Ron Cantor. That's T-O-R, Ron Cantor. com. Make sure you sign up for his emails. You do a weekly podcast.
Right.
What kind of things do you cover on the podcast?
We talk primarily about life in Israel. I do it with a Israeli named Tal Guinness. He's actually a professional comedian and a believer on fire for the Lord. And we just sit around and talk for about an hour about what's happening in the news in Israel. What's it like being a believer here? And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and the podcasts are enjoyable. Hey, 30 seconds, Ron.
Yes.
The materials that we've put out, you're going to help me out here for a moment, all right?
Yes.
The materials that we've put out, how have they been a help to Jewish believers?
Yeah, well, particularly answering Jewish objections to Jesus. You know, Yad Lachim, which is an anti-missionary group, they put a lot of energy into finding new believers, especially now with Facebook and Twitter. It's easier to locate people, and they will lie to them. They once told, just a few weeks ago, told a new believer that one of our pastors received 20,000 shekels when he was water immersed, which is ridiculous, of course.
Right, right.
So, and they produce a lot of confusion, but your series, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, is helping people learn how to answer these people.
And finally, coming out in Hebrew, there's an Israeli website where
yes.
that excerpted a lot of the material, put it out in Hebrew. Friends, I want to encourage you to partner with us for everyone who becomes a torchbearer. In fact, we've got torchbearers with us, monthly supporters who've been standing with our ministry now. Come over to Israel together with us. For all new monthly supporters, we're sending as a thank you gift the Tree of Life version of the Bible, the first ever complete new translation of the entire Bible from Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek into English with messianic sensitivities. It's a $30 value, but as you become a monthly supporter, it's our thank you gift to you, and then we sow into in many other ways every single month. So call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978, or just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. I want to encourage you to do one other thing today, and that is to get the book, Identity Theft, written by my guest, Ron Cantor. People find it to be a tremendously powerful, eye-opening read, Identity Theft. You can order it by going online. Go to Amazon.com. You get the e-version. There's an audio version now, or the print version. Ron Cantor, C-A-N-T-O-R, Identity Theft.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, why won't you believe in him?
Oh, here we are in Jerusalem. That is the great historic question. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. And I'm joined by my longtime friend and co-worker, and since 2003, living in Israel, Ron Cantor. Ron, you talk to, quote, your average Israeli. The bulk of the population is not religious. They know the biblical calendar and things like that, but they're not religious Jews. They're not absolutely observing the Sabbath and the dietary laws and things like that. You know, maybe 75% of the country say like that, 75, 80%. But let's just say the average Israeli, we're not talking about very religious, if you talk to them about Yeshua, do they know who that is?
They would call him Yeshu, which, as you know, means may his name be cursed forever, an acronym that the rabbis came up with many years later. So often I will talk to them about Yeshua, and they'll do one of two things. They will say, you mean Yeshu? And I'll say, no, that's not his name. His name is Yeshua. Or they'll say, oh, Joshua, Yehoshua. So they will. I've actually been witnessing to people and using Yeshua the whole time, and then realize that they think I'm talking about Joshua.
Got it. Got it. Right. So even though many Israelis will say Yeshu, and they're not thinking of the acronym Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, may his name and memory be blotted out, that actually is how it's often been used in religious Jewish circles. There's a debate. The final ion, did it drop out in sound? So Yeshu, and then it became shortened like that. But certainly it's been used in a negative sense.
Right.
So you have to kind of overcome that in your own mind, thinking, okay, they don't mean it negatively.
Right.
Okay, when they say Yeshu, who is that to him?
To them, it's the historical Jesus.
So who is the historical Jesus to them?
To them, that you know, you can't really answer that because it's so different to different people. There are some Orthodox Jews who have tremendous animosity towards the historical Jesus. Others who I think a week ago I was reading an article by a rabbi talking what a great man Jesus was, defending the Jewish roots of Christianity. Clearly not a believer, and making it clear he wasn't a believer. So some Israelis think he was a great guy, a prophet. Most Israelis just don't really care or think about it.
And if you said to them, I'm a Christian, what would that mean to them?
Well, if I said in Hebrew, ani notzri,
right,
which means a Nazarite, or that's how you say Christian here, to them that would mean I'm like a Catholic, I'm an Orthodox Christian. That doesn't mean, that would communicate to them not that I'm an evangelical Bible-believing born-again believer, but that I go to a church that is very religious and I do sacraments and liturgy, and that's what it would mean to them.
If you said to them, ani Yehudi Mashichi, I'm a Messianic Jew, would that mean anything to them?
Surprisingly, many of them do know what that means, a Messianic Jew. I meet both in Jewish people in America and here more and more, and they'll say, oh, I have a cousin, or I have a Scott Brown, who was a Messianic rabbi in America for many years, really very successful. I met his cousin in a Bloomingdale's in Boca Raton, told her I was a Messianic Jew. She said, my cousin. And I've met many, had many instances like that. So, yeah, we do call ourselves Yehudim Mashichim, Messianic Jews, or Ma'aminim, believers, but typically would not use the word Christian.
Right, because it does convey something different. It does convey I've converted to another religion, which is basically considered a foreign religion.
Right.
And it would be very un-Jewish in that respect as well.
And you mentioned in our book, Identity Theft, that's really why we wrote it, is to, in that confusion, why does it, if I say that I'm a Christian or a Messianic Jew, why doesn't it mean the same thing? Well,
right.
It doesn't, because Yeshua's identity has been changed for the most part, that of his believers. But in the first century, all of his followers were Jewish, certainly until the time of Cornelius, and they were tens of thousands of Jews. By the way, I do want to mention, if folks would like to read the first two chapters free, just go to idtheftbook.com.
All right, ID as in identity, idtheftbook.com. Read the first two chapters and you'll be hooked.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
How many songs, how many stories these stony hills recall. Around her heart my city carries a lonely ancient wall.
He gets, as we are, in Jerusalem, coming your way live in the midst of my first ever tour group here in Israel with the help of my friend and colleague, Scott Volk. Delighted to be with you. My guest, longtime friend, co-worker, Ron Cantor. We've been talking about some of the challenges in Israel, some of the difficulties. Ron, I just saw something today that Yad Lachim, which is the counter-missionary organization, has made an appeal to the Pope. And let me just see if I can... let's see. Someone else sent it to me, and I think I can find it here in a second. Well, anyway...
Well, they're encouraging the Pope to encourage...
Yeah, here we go. Here we go. Yep. Pope Francis, ultra-Orthodox activists, so not necessarily Yad Lachim, but ultra-Orthodox activists, have called on Pope Francis to forbid his followers to spread their faith among members of other religions. In a letter sent to the Pope ahead of his visit to Israel, it is Yad Lachim, sorry, the Yad Lachim organization, which literally means hand for the brothers, stated that the Catholic Church objects to missionary activity, which is a weird statement, and that he should therefore use his visit to issue a clear statement on the matter. Quote, "We hope that you will find the time to deal with this painful issue, which is both a religious and human problem. Unfortunately, we have been witnessing a serious phenomenon of growing escalation in Christian missionary activity in Israel. Thousands of Christian missionaries are operating in a manipulative manner among Jews of all ages and all parts of the public in a bid to capture their souls and convert them to Christianity. This phenomenon is particularly serious when these Christian missionaries take advantage of the distress of disabled, sick, elderly Jews and new immigrants, offering them help with the direct goal of making these miserable people who are members of the Jewish faith adopt the Christian religion." Ron, how do you respond to that as a Messianic Jew?
Well, first of all, the Pope doesn't have very much influence over the Messianic body of believers here in Israel. And that's who they're referring to. They call them Christian missionaries, but I'm a citizen of this country. I am not a missionary. I am a missionary goes to a foreign country. I live in my country. My passport says Israel, has my name on it, my picture on it.
Your wife is a native born.
And she was born in Jerusalem. So what I find particularly funny about this is that when a ultra-Orthodox Jewish person helps somebody who is in need, it's called compassion. When a Messianic Jew helps somebody in need, it's manipulative.
So do the ultra-Orthodox and other Jewish organizations help elderly, disabled Jews come to the land?
I would hope so.
And would they want to help them, let's say they're not religious Jews, help them to become traditional Jews? Right. That's what they do.
If you drive around this nation at stoplights all over the country, there'll be Orthodox Jews seeking to encourage secular Jews to become Orthodox.
And are they on college campuses where the young people
everywhere.
Are very impressionable?
They're everywhere.
Right. So they do their outreach, and it's good because it's for a good cause in their eyes. When you do your outreach, you are taking advantage of the disabled and the elderly and trying to convert them to Christianity.
Yes, and nothing against the disabled and the elderly, who we do want to reach with the good news of Yeshua. But if you visited our congregation, you would see a wide spectrum representing Israeli life and culture, from native-born Israelis to immigrants, people who are intelligent and people who might struggle.
And if you, Ron Cantor, if you could reach a particular audience, a particular group of people, where you really want to see them coming to faith and being part of your congregation, Tiferet Yeshua, who would those people be?
Well, I feel particularly called to the secular Jews of Tel Aviv. But if I could reach anyone and it would be easy, I would choose certainly the Orthodox Jews of Jerusalem, because they, if they can be this zealous over something that I don't believe to be true. Imagine what they would be like if they find the truth in Yeshua the Messiah.
All right. So not all, of course, you care about the disabled, the elderly, but it's not your
absolutely.
Main, it's not your main focus.
No.
And
let me just say this. We have a feeding program called Feed Tel Aviv. And I hate to give out another website, but Feed Tel Aviv, I think it's .org or .com. You can sponsor an Israeli, but we feed Israelis. And it's not connected to, they don't have to become believers. We don't stuff a New Testament inside.
Inside the food.
Inside the food. So you're eating a hot dog and then you're like, wait, what is this? It's a tract. No, we don't do that. Obviously, I assume they know that we're believers, but we don't make a big deal of it because we want it to be very clear. We're feeding you because you're human and you need food and we want to express love to you. We're not trying to manipulate you to come to our congregation.
And the same with me in terms of reaching people. The ones that I'm most eager to reach are the hardest to reach. The ones that I spend most of my time with over the years interacting with are the very, very religious. And just like we would be hard to reach because we are devoted to our cause,
right.
They'd be hard to reach. So rather than going after the ignorant, the ones that don't know
sure.
anything, and the secular Israelis, you're going after. They're college grads. They're working people. They're like just folks in the society. You
right.
want to bring the good news. Okay. Yad Lachim expresses its hope from the bottom of its heart and soul that you, the Pope, will call for a ban, not you, Ron, the Pope, that the Pope will call for a ban on all missionary activity among members of all religions. So, again, that shows the level of disconnect, not to bash the Pope. And we'll talk about the political
right.
aspects of his visit. I'll get into that the second hour. But not to bash the Pope, but the Pope, what authority would the Pope have over Messianic Jewish congregations in Israel?
Right, and that's one of the sad things about the ignorance among in the Jewish world regarding Jewish believers. That there is an assumption that we are part of the Catholic Church, that we that they could appeal to the Pope and that would have any influence. They to this day, they are convinced that we are Christians masquerading as Jews with the goal. We know that the gospel is more marketable to Jews if we tell them they can still be Jewish. But once we get them in, then we funnel them into churches. Of course, in Israel, we're all Messianic congregations. So once someone comes as a believer, there is no Baptist church to funnel them into. Not that we would ever do that anywhere, but they truly, genuinely believe these lies.
Yeah. You know, in the early days when the Messianic movement was first birthed, and people were finding their way, Jewish believers even recovering Jewish roots, many of them were raised in a secular home, bar mitzvah, but they didn't know a lot. And okay, hey, look, we're Jews, we should have a congregation, Messianic congregation, we shouldn't call it a church, and a leader, instead of being a pastor, you should be a rabbi. There may not have been as much depth behind it. But you
right.
and I both know many, many Messianic Jewish leaders and Messianic Jews who are committed to the biblical calendar, who feel
absolutely.
It's very important to observe Sabbath and honoring God and part of the covenant.
Particularly if you live here in Israel, it's part of the cycle of life. So when Passover comes around, it's, are we going to do Passover? Of course, you live in Israel.
Look, when you lived in the States, you know, Alana, you'd have a Friday night Shabbat meal.
Absolutely.
With the family, you'd build many times. I'd be over, what are you doing, building a sukkah?
Right.
Right. So
in front of my Palestinian neighbors.
Right. So these were things you were doing, not, if there was not a single Jew to share the gospel with in the world, you'd be doing it. And I have counter-missionary friends who recognize, yeah, you guys are serious about this.
And wouldn't you agree with me, Dr. Brown, that more and more around the world, Jewish scholarship is at least waking up to the reality of the Jewish roots of the faith?
Oh, of course. I mean, certain things have always been known. But let's just say there's more and more recognition, more and more Jewish scholars looking at Yeshua in a positive light, and some even looking at Paul in a positive light.
Now, would you say it's connected to the publishing of my book, Identity Theft?
Well, no, actually, it was due to my book, The Real Kosher Jesus,
which came out just before.
Right. And by the way, the real trick with identity theft is I wrote it, and it's about me. He stole my identity. But seriously, friends, let me just give you another plug. Read the first two chapters for free of Identity Theft. It's really wild because Ron had this book ready to publish and suddenly gets this idea. I'm supposed to rewrite the whole book almost overnight as a novel. And that's what's really drawn people in. So again, for folks to read the first two chapters of Identity Theft by Ron Cantor. Where do they go?
IDtheftbook.com.
All right. ID theft as an identity. ID theft. Can they also sign up? You should also have it sign up. Identity theft software and stuff like that.
You should see on Twitter, and I get these messages and emails of people connected to identity theft because they think that that's the business I'm in.
Oh, really?
Not in stealing people's identity, but in protecting people from that.
All right. So idbook.com, and they can read the first two chapters of identity theft there for free. And then once you do, you can order to read the rest. All right, I've got one more segment with my good friend Ron Cantor. And then I've got a question I'm going to be asking in the second hour. I've got a ton of responses to this very simple question on Facebook. I'm going to ask it when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That is a Mizrahi melody, Carol Cantrell. Michael Brown, no, I'm not going to sing. Michael Brown, live in Jerusalem, the other voice you just heard, my dear friend, Ron Cantor, living here in Israel, 11 years, man. Isn't that wild?
It's crazy.
11 years with his wife, Alana. They've got three daughters. Your youngest now serving in the military. Just tell us real quick how it felt to send each of your girls into military service.
It was really awesome, primarily because they were female. I knew they wouldn't be in seeing combat. But seeing them go into the Army to serve the country, it's such a rite of passage here. In fact, what makes you Israeli, accepted by Israelis, right up there with learning Hebrew, speaking their language, is going into the Army. When you tell somebody that you served in the Army and you're an immigrant, that means everything to them. That really says I'm part of the people. So it was incredibly emotional to see our girls go into the Army and to serve the country.
You know, I was talking to a cab driver when I was in Tiberias area, and he was saying, look, I got two sons in the Army. Who wants to have your kids fighting?
Right.
And there is that aspect, especially, sending in sons, that everybody has to do it. And,
right. It's also different as an immigrant coming over here. You come over with a real spirit of Zionism. You've read the scriptures. So serving in the Army isn't just about putting your kids in danger. It's about fulfillment of prophecy, and you trust the Lord. But for a lot of Israelis, they're born here, so they might not be burning with Zionism the way I am. And so the idea of why does my kid have to go fight in the Army? It can be a very difficult thing. But even still, for that child, your average Israeli, even though he may hate every day in the Army, he's proud to serve in the Army.
Got it. And how did it go for your girls? You've got one in the Army now, but for your older two?
First one, very difficult. They had her answering phones in Hebrew, and she still wasn't fluent in Hebrew. So she had a really, really hard time. My second daughter, again, every Israeli I've ever met, no one says, oh, I love the Army, I can't wait to wake up Sunday morning and go back. Sunday morning is the first day of the week here. Nobody's going to come to you and say, other than my wife. My wife's the one Israeli who loved the Army.
What did she do in the Army?
She was a drill sergeant for very handsome pilots. So I think that's why she liked it. So... but Yael had a much easier time. And then Danielle, initially everyone has a hard time because it's almost your freedom is taken away. You just finished high school, and then a month, 2 months, maybe 3 or 4 months goes by, and you get that letter and you got to show up, and you're not your own person. So there's a certain amount of dying that goes into it, because unlike in the States where you volunteer to be in the Army, here you have no choice. But I do know for my daughters, particularly my two younger daughters, because Sharon was much older when we moved here, You grow up preparing for Army your whole life. Not, again, I don't want people to misunderstand me. Not in a warmongering, not at all. It's just what you do as Israeli. So from the time you enter high school, you start preparing that for, in real preparation. And then before that, emotionally.
And does it have a maturing effect on people?
I would say, as a parent, I would say absolutely. I noticed a deeper responsibility grow in all of my daughters because of the Army service.
Yeah, really quite amazing. All right, Ron, we've just got a couple of minutes. Give me a testimony or two of an Israeli, native-born, someone you've seen come to faith recently that's really special to hear.
Well, I don't know exactly how. I'll call her S. We try and really protect the identity of particularly new believers because of Yad Vashem and anti-missionaries who will seek them out to destroy their faith.
So when he's speaking of a woman named S, it's actually a man whose name starts with T.
Right. And
but it's a female anyway.
No, she's a female, and her name starts with S. She came to faith about a year and a half ago, and she is on fire for God. Since that time, she's brought her mother to faith, her mother's boyfriend to faith, another friend of hers who is now on fire for God in the congregation. And she actually came to us as a new believer and said, if you guys don't disciple me, I'm leaving the congregation. You want people like that. So we're like, okay, great. And we put her in a system of discipleship, and she's growing. Yeah.
Neat. And do you often see something spread through the family, or is there just resistance? Or?
Yeah, I would say that is the primary way that we grow as a congregation, is through friends and family. You know, people often ask, how do you reach people? We rarely go out on the streets, because for your average Israeli, it's a very strange thing for someone to walk up to you and say, I want you to become a believer in Yeshua. You have enough opportunities just through living life, just through going to the store, going to work, because Israelis are extremely curious. And as a new immigrant, I have found tremendous favor with Israelis. They will ask me, once they find I'm a believer, they may not be saying, how do I be saved, but they do want to know how I came to faith. They want to hear the story. They want to hear my testimony. You just have to get out there and let it come to the surface in the conversation.
All right, Ron, if folks could pray for the Cantor family, what would you ask them to pray for?
Just more of Yeshua in our lives, deeper intimacy with him, that we, you know, we're now in a senior pastoral role along with our dear friends Asher and Betty Intrader. And there's a warfare that comes along with that. So we certainly would ask for prayer and protection for our daughters, that we would all just love Yeshua with all our hearts and go forward in his calling.
All right, friends, go to roncantor.com out of the 18 websites we've given you. Same with me, buddy. Everything is a new website. We keep trying to consolidate. Ron Cantor, T-O-R. He is a cousin of the political leader Eric Cantor. RonCantor.com. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter there. And then, is there a link to get the free ebook there?
Well, there's two free ebooks. We're updating our website now. If you do it from the website, you get our free ebook, Messianic Jews, the Most Hated People on Earth.
But
if you go to roncan.net/15facts, you will get
Do they write 15 or the number 15?
15, capital F.
All right, start from the beginning. RonCan.com.
RonCan.net.
RonCan.net.
That's net, everyone. NET slash 15, capital F, acts. 15 facts. And this is an incredible new ebook we put together with lots of videos and graphics, and it's called 15 Facts That You Need to Know About the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict.
Yeah, and the material is really good, really important, especially get it out to as many young people as possible. Hey, Ron, thanks for joining me, and thanks for welcoming me into the land on this trip.
Always great to be with you.
Yeah, and we'll be praying for Alana and the family as well. All right, friends, make sure you visit my website. Check out our latest article. It is Memorial Day. We'll be talking about some weighty issues in the second hour as Ron has to get on. It's evening here. It's approaching 10 o'clock in the evening in Israel. But go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article to catch up on what we've written while here in Israel. And to take advantage of our latest offers, just go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You can become a monthly supporter, give a one-time gift, or take advantage of many special offers there. My bottom line today, Ministry in Israel is wonderful, but there are many challenges, difficulties, and obstacles. Don't just pray for the non-believing Jews. Pray for the believing Jews. You know, a whole lot is happening, not just in America, but in Israel and in the Jewish world worldwide. We'll talk about it live from Jerusalem today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am coming your way from Jerusalem as we are continuing our tour here with our tour group of Israel. I just spent an hour with my dear friend Ron Cantor, who's lived here in Israel for 11 years, his wife Alana, native-born Israeli. Alana came to faith when I was preaching a message at a Messianic conference in August of 1986, and Ron and I had met a few years earlier when he was a brand new believer. So we go back quite a long way. But I've got some guests here that are part of our tour group. I'm going to ask them a couple of questions. I've got a question for you, though. I posted this a few hours ago on Facebook. Let me just see when I posted this question on Facebook. I know it's Memorial Day in the States. Many of you listening that don't normally get to listen live because you're off from work. Again, my heartfelt appreciation to all of our soldiers and soldiers' family who have sacrificed so much for our freedoms in America. And a lot happened over the weekend. Bloodshed in America, bloodshed, the Jewish Museum in Brussels, in Belgium. Just a lot going on in the world these days. But I want to ask you a question. All right, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Here's what I posted on Facebook about 5 hours ago. It's gotten several hundred responses since. Compared to when you were a child, is America today in better or worse moral condition? I've got a lot of Jewish-related things I want to talk to you about, news I want to talk to you about, important things going on, but I've got this question I want to ask you as well. You may be 18 years old listening. You may be 88, but compared to when you were a child, is America today in better or worse moral condition? 866-348-7884. There's a lot of discussion now about the Pope's visit to Israel. We had to get to some places early yesterday because streets were being closed down all over Israel. There were 8,000 policemen that were sent. There was a joke, if you want to speed on the road or rob a bank or something, this is the day to do it because 8,000 policemen are going to be there guarding the Pope and soldiers and intelligence units and all of this. So we had to get into certain places earlier, leave a few other places a little later because of the Pope's entourage. But there is a lot of attention. The Pope has made reference to the state of Palestine, which is anything but official. David Rubin notes on Israel National News that the Pope's pointed reference to the state of Palestine and his decision to fly directly from Jordan to Bethlehem, thereby skipping over Israeli territory, was interpreted by many as symbolic political support for the creation of an independent Palestinian state. As his day continued, he made a stop at the security wall that separates Jerusalem from Bethlehem, the defensive barrier that Israel had built about 10 years ago to protect Israel's capital from Islamic suicide bombers. And what could only be understood as a political act, the Pope bowed his head and prayed in front of a bold graffiti display which proclaimed, "Free Palestine." David Rubin continues, "If it was justice that the Pope was seeking in Bethlehem, he could have easily made reference to the ongoing persecution and violent intimidation of local Christians at the hands of the Palestinian Authority, which has rapidly shrunk the once robust 80% Christian population down to less than 15%. Could the Pope have said a prayer for the suffering of these Christian Islamic victims, these Christian victims of Islamic tolerance?" And then David Rubin says, "Perhaps the most righteous prayer could have been dedicated to the memory of the thousands of Israeli victims of Islamic terrorism emanating from Palestinian-controlled cities like Bethlehem. It's sad but true that the Vatican doesn't have a stellar record when it comes to protecting its own children. So perhaps we shouldn't be surprised by its lack of recognition for the suffering of Jewish children who've been victimized by the Fatah terror group led by Man of Peace, in quotes, Mahmoud Abbas. All right, we will be right back live from Jerusalem on this Memorial Day.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, coming your way live from Jerusalem, Michael Brown, blessed to be with you on this Memorial Day. Let's see, tomorrow the tour group will be going to City of David. We'll be going to Wailing Wall, other parts of Jerusalem. So many different things to see in the land. 866-34-TRUTH. Compared to when you were a child, is America today in better or worse moral condition? I'm not focusing on that in terms of things that I'm talking about, but I do want to get your feedback and your input. I'm looking on one Facebook page where, oh, there are 240 or so responses to that. And then on another Facebook page where I asked the same question, let's just see here. Whole bunch more comments and responses there. So since your childhood to today, is America in better or worse moral condition? 866-348-7884. Before I talk to you more about some of the news, some of the things that have happened in the Jewish world, and some major things, some things that need our attention and that should merit our prayerful concern, I want to talk to a couple folks that are on our tour group here. And why don't you just grab the mic there and give us your name and where you're from.
Ahmed Lewis, and I'm from Hapag, Long Island, New York.
All right. So this for those listening in other parts of America, this is the proper way. This is the original way to speak English. Is this your first time here in Israel?
Yes, it is.
And you're here together with your wife?
Yes.
All right. What were you expecting when you came on the tour?
I was expecting a land that would be barren. I expect to see a lot of cactus, a lot of just burnt up ground. I knew they had a thriving city of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, but after that, I didn't expect to see much more than just a barren desert.
All right, what have you seen?
I was blown away. Truly, the desert has bloomed from the Golan Heights all the way down. It's just been amazing to see the fruitfulness of how the land is just producing beautiful green crops. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and there are some places where the Israeli farmers have learned how to have multiple harvesting seasons through the year. And remember, these were swamps that the immigrants had to drain, and they had to figure out how to survive, how their kids could survive growing up in the midst of malaria-infested swamplands and things like that. So the transformation is quite remarkable. What about the things that you've seen, sites of ruins and places of biblical history? What's been impacting you the most?
Well, today we went up on top of Masada. I was just blown away. We took the cable car up on top, and the sites we could see, we could look all around at different places. And I was amazed at how could people on top of a height so high supply water to themselves? I mean, they couldn't turn a faucet on.
Right.
But yet we learned that they had aqueducts built into the side of Masada there. When the flash floods would come, these aqueducts would run water into a cistern that could supply Masada for months on end. It was just incredible.
How did it feel, say, on top of Mount Carmel or looking down at Megiddo?
Just reliving Bible history, reliving the Old Testament, where I've read time again about Gideon. Elijah is just awesome.
And what about being out in the Sea of Galilee?
Incredible. A beautiful sea. I expected waves. It's as flat and glassy. You could see across the other side. And I could just relive the words of Jesus when he said, come follow me by the side of the Sea of Galilee. Come follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. And then he says, let's go over to the other side. You could see the other side over in Caesarea. We were over there, too, back over in Tiberias. Awesome. Just rewalking the same steps that Jesus walked.
And obviously it's early in that you're still on the trip and you're a few days more before you go back home and process everything. But if you had to say how it's impacted you spiritually, could you describe that? Could you put that in words?
it's made the Bible come more alive to me. Once we landed, I started looking in the back of went back to Matthew, and just started reading Jesus' words and the places he traveled to. Those are the same places we travel to. It makes the whole scriptures come alive right in my heart. My wife and I are discussing it and say, yeah, that's what Jesus meant. And it's just so refreshing to look at the Word of God in a whole new light.
Neat. All right, why don't you pass the mic over to your better half over here as she's we're just going to chat. It's okay. You don't need the headphones. We're just going to chat here. All right, just the two of us chatting in the room. Just got to keep the mic close at hand. Tell us your first name.
Patty.
Patty, and you grew up on Long Island also?
Yes, I did.
All right. Now, between the two of you, who wanted to come here more? Was it kind of equal?
I think both of us did. I think I kind of said we would do it and put things in motion, but he went right along with it.
Neat. And he's talked a lot about how things have impacted him, what he's experienced. If someone asked you, the first thing you would tell them when you get back home and they say, how's the trip? What's the first thing you're going to tell them?
That it was amazing, that it was life-changing, that this nation here, you know, everybody says it's dangerous, and yet I feel so safe here. And I feel God's presence, and I feel his love for this nation. And I sense that a changing that's going on inside of me, that I really feel that I'm developing a heart for this nation and how much God is just here. And everything here is so historic and so God's heart, and it's wonderful.
Now, being on Long Island, even though you're out in Suffolk County, still you're in a very Jewish part of America, in a Jewish part of the world, especially the closer you get into the city. And yet it's different being in Israel. It's not just being around Jewish people. Everything changes for
right.
you. So today going down Dead Sea and then Masada, the whole history, as we've got a tremendous tour guide, she's filling in on everything. Were you familiar with that history before, what happened at Masada?
No. Absolutely not. But it was so interesting. I bought the brochure because I have to reread it because the story is just amazing. I wish I could recount it, but it was so deep and there was so much detail to it that I really need to reread it. But it was just very enlightening to how they lived back then and how they had fortresses and how they fought enemies and just how biblical it was. And they found the Dead Sea Scrolls up there and this people group that was up there, these Jewish zealots that lived up there, what, about 900 of them or something, and how they gave their lives because they wouldn't let the Romans come and take them because they wanted
them.
To die free.
Right. So they were the last resistance in the Jewish revolt against Rome. The temple fell in 70, but they fought on. The resistance continued for another few years. And when they were going to be, when it was over, when there was no more resistance, rather than let the Romans kill them or rape their women or take them into slavery, they took their own lives. And today, when you are sworn into the military, that's the place.
Yes.
That's the place that
yes.
it's done. So there's a certain history and remembrance. And, you know, I just want to say this. When you see what happened over the weekend, you may have primarily read about the horrific shootings in Santa Barbara and the stabbings. And, of course, it's shocking. It's heartrending for all the families involved. It reminds us of the pain of our fallen world. And then there were some other shootings in the States as well. You may not have read, it may not have gotten your attention as much, that a shooter walked into the Jewish Museum in Brussels, Belgium, and killed three people. There's chilling video where you can see him walking in. He's hooded. You can't see his face clearly. And then he just walks out from there before anybody can find him. So Jews killed there. And then in Paris, two Jewish men leaving the synagogue, severely beaten with brass knuckles, other reports of them being stabbed, serious injuries that they're expected to recover from. You're a Jew living in those communities, and then you have what happened in Ukraine recently and the scare there. Jewish people remember what happened in Europe and what happened in other parts of the world to their parents, to their grandparents and their great grandparents. They know that society can suddenly turn on the Jewish people. And you have to understand that Israel has been the place where Jews have now gone. Look, there was a shooting. It was, ironically, Christians, Gentiles that were shot, not Jews, by a Jew hater in the States just a few weeks back. But this has been the place. Israel has been the place where Jewish people can come. And that's why the Israeli model, never again, that after the Holocaust, there will be a place, there will be a homeland for Jewish people to return to. And you see what happened in Belgium, you see what happened in France. I understand, on the one hand, these are isolated instances, but there is so much hostility against the Jewish people. For years now, the same levels of hostility against the Jewish people that existed before the Holocaust exist today around the world. And with radical Islam and its violent anti-Semitism, and then such world pressure on Israel as if it's some evil occupier, you realize it wouldn't take much for ugly attack on Jewish people around the world. And there is a homeland, there is a place for Jews to come. At least let them feel secure and safe here. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is Michael Brown coming your way live from Jerusalem as you hear Songs of Jerusalem right here on the Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH on this Memorial Day. I want to talk to another one of our tour guests about what's impacted them here in Israel. I said three killed in the shooting in the Jewish Museum. It's actually four that were killed. And ironically, an Israeli couple, so a couple from Tel Aviv, that the couple was in Belgium, they were killed there at the Jewish Museum. And Prime Minister Netanyahu has slammed the Brussels shooting as a result of hateful incitement. He said this: it is the result of, quote, endless incitement against Jews and their state. And then just hours after the Brussels attack, and remember, at this point, when something like this happens, it feels like you're just a handful of you in the world, and the whole world is against you. Suddenly, every Jew would feel vulnerable, especially religious Jews who are more readily identifiable. A rabbi in the Netherlands, I quoted a few days ago, saying that he cannot walk the streets of his home country a single day without someone calling him a dirty Jew. So just hours after that attack, the attack in Brussels, two Jewish men were attacked outside Paris. They were leaving a synagogue. So according to official reports, Interior Ministry of France, the incident occurred around 8:30 at night. Two brothers, aged 21 and 18, both wearing yarmulkes, kippot, so the head coverings, were severely beaten with brass knuckles by two unknown men who then fled. A very obvious attack from everything that we can see based on them being Jewish. And here's what's got to be chilling for Israel. Are you ready? Okay, Israel wants to make peace with its partners, with its Palestinian partners. It wants to make peace. It cannot consider Hamas a partner in any way. Hamas has said for them, peace with Israel is ethnic cleansing. In other words, kill the Jews, get rid of the Jews, get them out of Israel. There is no Jewish state. There is no Jewish homeland. The Palestinian Authority is considered to be the more moderate peace partner, and in certain ways it is. But just so you get a feel for this, just so you understand the sentiment, the mentality, reading this report that arch terrorist Marwan Barghouti would be the favorite candidate for prime minister of the Palestinian Authority. He is serving five life terms for a number of murders that he was involved with. There were many, many other terrorist attacks, 33 other murders that he's associated with, but those charges were dropped because of lack of evidence of his direct involvement in those crimes. But he was found guilty of murder in three terrorist attacks in Israel that killed five people. So five life sentences. All right. When he was arrested in 2002, that's when he headed up Fatah, the Palestinian Authority's military wing, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. Just notice that name, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. After he was imprisoned, he was reelected as a member of the Palestinian Authority Parliament. And right now, if there was a vote, Mahmoud Abbas would not win the vote. Mahmoud Abbas, according to this Palestinian Center for Public Opinion poll, all right, Mahmoud Abbas would only get 29% of the vote. The head of Hamas would get less. Ismail Haniyeh, he would only get 16%. But Barghouti would get 33% of the vote. This is Israel's so-called peace partner. This is what we are dealing with in the Middle East today. All right, I want to hear from another tour member in the midst of this very serious news on Memorial Day. It's also a time where people, every month, thousands, tens of thousands are experiencing Israel for the very first time. So one of our guests came on the air with us, chatted Friday night about his experiences so far. But tell us your name again and where you're from.
My name's Stephen from Burke, Virginia.
All right. Now, Stephen, you were with us at the service Sunday night at King of Kings in Jerusalem. King of Kings is a congregation founded by Wayne Hilsden. He's Canadian. He and his wife Anne, Gentiles. God sent us to Israel with a mission to plant congregations. They have an amazing international speaking congregation here. People come from many different nations and the local internationals. They have a Hebrew speaking congregation. They have a school of the arts. We're broadcasting from their radio studio right now. But you were in the service. What was it that impacted you in the service Sunday night?
I was surprised to see the reaction and the size of it, both Jewish believers and Christian believers. And the other fact that you provided the sermon, and to hear their reaction, the spirit was so deep in the church there.
Yeah, it was. You know, I preached a message, obviously in keeping with my heart and my convictions. It was a call to courage, a call to go against the grain, to swim against the tide, to be soldiers, to be overcomers, not to have an attitude of what's in it for me, but an attitude of how can I make a difference for the Lord. And the people were with us.
They sure were. I mean, I had some of the same reactions. I had the same reaction they did. It convicted me and it encouraged me. And I know I heard many of them say the same thing.
And as you're on this tour now, it's a whole lot to see. Some of the days, like tomorrow, I'll start an hour or two after, catch up with everyone, because I'll be up till late at night, and then you guys, everybody's leaving early in the morning. So it's a really, really full schedule, packed in. We can't talk about what happened at the Army base when we were there. We're not allowed to talk about it, but what kind of impact did that have on you?
Oh, my goodness. It was so cool. To know that you have we can't talk about it, but
we can talk generically.
These guys are impressive. That's I can say that. And they make our special forces. They can learn. Our special forces can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, and of course, we do things cooperatively. But one thing you'll always hear from the Israeli military is how careful they have to be to preserve civilian life, because many times a terrorist will take refuge knowing that he is in civilian territory, or even there'll be terrorist activities carried out. Hamas is infamous, say, for using a hospital and launching terrorist attacks from there. So how can Israel try to take out their military when they're in the midst of civilians? So the ethics are very high, and yet the Israelis understand we must protect ourselves because we are surrounded by hostile enemies. 866-34-TRUTH. Gosh, should I give away a Tree of Life version of the Messianic Bible?
I think that would be a good idea.
All right. So I think we're unanimous here. I'm going to give away a free Bible when we come back. Some more news relating to the Jewish people and Israel worldwide. And overwhelmingly, I haven't looked at all the answers and responses so far, But every single person that I have seen who responded to my question, which is hundreds and hundreds now between the websites, compared to when you were a child, is America today in better or worse moral condition? Overwhelmingly, worse, much worse, extremely worse. Could it be a ripe time for revival?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
If you hear some Middle Eastern sounding music, it's because I am in the Middle East. Michael Brown coming away live from Jerusalem in Israel, in the midst of an amazing tour with a great, great tour group. Folks being impacted, as I expected, but it's still amazing to see how people are impacted being here. And I'm reminded, just being out different days with everyone in different locations, of how much there is to see and experience in Israel. It's really kind of mind-boggling. In a little while, I'm going to give away a free copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. It is the first ever complete translation from the Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek by a team of scholars with Messianic Jewish sensitivities. So it's not just Jesus as Yeshua and Christ as Messiah. It's James as Jacob and Jude as Judah, and when appropriate, law as Torah, but in a way that's very understandable, and in a way that you can use it for your church preaching, you can use it for your Messianic Jewish congregations, you can use it for your own personal Bible study, and great for Jewish outreach as well. It is a $30 value, and it's hardcover, and it's yours free. And just as your reward for listening on Memorial Day, caller number 7, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, caller number 7. We will send you a free copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. This was just reported on PowWatch 2 weeks ago, PowWatch.org. This is Media Watch organization, Israel, monitoring what's being taught, what's being broadcast on Palestinian TV, state TV. The Palestinian TV host asked the question, what poem do you like to recite most? And then the boy named Mohammed, this creative boy who writes and recites poetry, so he's on the TV show, and they ask him, and he says, the poem people like the best wherever I went, people ask me to recite the poem, Visa, and then he gives the name of the poet. When I was young, I was taught that Arabness is my honor, and that our land extends from one end to the other, and that our wars were for the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and that our enemy Zion is Satan with a tail, and that our nation's armies are outstanding. That's what he was taught as a boy. And that is the favorite poem to recite. We do have a winner. Thank you for calling. We do have a winner. By the way, you can purchase now the Tree of Life version, but to give it away, that was just caller number 7. So we have a winner. Thank you all for calling. Maybe, just in honor of being live in Jerusalem on Memorial Day, I'll give away one more Bible a little bit before the show is over. Make sure you get the number ready, 866-34-TRUTH. And click on the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And when you go there, you will make sure you click on the latest article to see what we have been writing since we've been here in Israel, new articles posting. Matt, I think my next article that I'm going to write and post on WorldNet Daily is going to be about Israel's, quote, peace partners. And I will let them know what is said and spoken in the Palestinian Authority. And then a Hamas leader, again, saying that peace for Hamas is ethnic cleansing. Kill the Jews or get the Jews out of here. That's what Israel's dealing with. That's why all Israeli young people have to serve in the military, young men for 3 years, young women for 2 years. The only exemptions would be in terms of general exemptions for ultra-Orthodox, and there is a move to get them to serve in the military as well. All right, we'll be back momentarily. Some more Jewish news from around the world I do want to share with you. And on this day, a lot of emotions for a lot of people. A lot of you that fought for your country, you're saying, where's America headed? Let's pray. Let's pray for the nation.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884, as we come your way live from Jerusalem. And we are delighted to be with you. On tomorrow's broadcast, I'm going to tell you an interesting story of how the Israeli maitre d' at the hotel where our tour group is having dinner, where we were on Saturday night in Tiberias. We had a special meal just with our torchbearers, our monthly supporters, and it didn't quite come out spelled torchbearers. I'll tell you about that on the broadcast tomorrow, but it was something funny and memorable for all of us. A few minutes, I'm going to give away one more copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. Again, we are one of the first ministries anywhere in America to have these. They're hardcover, slimline, and complete translation of the Old and New Testament by a team of scholars with messianic sensitivities. I just want to go back to one of our tour group members who's with us, Ed from Hopog, Long Island. You were at the Golan Heights, all right? The group went. How close did you get? Where exactly did you go?
We went up on top of a mountain that we could look over Jordan and over Syria at the same time, if I'm not mistaken. We climbed in a bunker, an abandoned bunker, and it was really the awesome viewpoint. The strategic part of that was just amazing to see that.
How close did Syria seem to you?
They were right there, right there.
Now, you know, of course, Syria for years has said they want the Golan Heights back. That was taken in the midst of war and taken in the most remarkable way to capture the Golan Heights. Great sacrifice involved with it. But it is strategic. I mean, if Israel doesn't have it, you could basically shoot with a rifle down at Israelis. You don't even need long-range missiles or anything like that.
It's a very important buffer, very important buffer.
So in that light, let's understand that the war in Syria is coming over into Israel at times. On the one hand, there are refugees escaping. And who's caring for these refugees? Israel is. Israel has a makeshift hospital set up in the Golan Heights, you know, a tent hospital, and that's for people to treat immediately as the refugees make their way out. And then they are treated for free in Israeli hospitals all over the land, as are children, Palestinian children who were sick, others who were sick and injured, treated in Israeli hospitals. But also sometimes the warfare is so close that if somebody misses their target, the firing comes into Israel, and then Israel has to retaliate just to make sure it stays back. But this is just an update from, three, 4 days ago. Syrian al-Qaeda reached foothills of Israeli Golan. Last month, Syrian Islamist fighters of the Nusra Front captured the hill of Tel Ahmar, just a few kilometers from Israeli forces on the Golan Heights. There they hoisted the al-Qaeda flag and praised their mentor, Osama bin Laden. Nearly 2,000 Nusra Front fighters operate the area, manning dozens of checkpoints across the Hauran Plain from the Golan Heights frontier in the west to Deraa in the east. And according to the report that I'm reading, the Islamist groups have become the main actors on the ground. The Free Syrian Army has disintegrated. This is according to former Jordanian Army General and military analyst Fayez Dawari. So this is getting very, very close to home. And then another report, Islamic extremism on the rise in Jordan. Again, as we were driving by the Jordan River, you just look over. There's Jordan. When I went up in the prayer tower after speaking at King of Kings here in Jerusalem, the same building where we are right now, went up in the prayer tower and looked out. You could see over to Jordan from there. So, I mean, you know, Sarah Palin's thinking about she could see Russia from her home in Alaska and all the criticism she received. Now, there's no joke here in terms of what can be seen. So, according to this report from Jerusalem news update. So many weapons are coming into Jordan through the Syrian border that the price of a Kalashnikov rifle has fallen to less than $500. 2 years ago, the same rifle cost $2,000. Convoys crossed the border to Jordan from nearby in Syria, loaded with large quantities of weapons of all types. Sunni Islamist fundamentalists are behind these operations. And since April 23rd, Jordanian Mountain Province has seen a complete security breakdown and serious armed unrest. That's why it is so critically important for the Jewish nation of Israel to have secure borders, and then for these surrounding Muslim nations to know how to deal with the rising tide of Islamic terrorism. All right, let me give away another Bible. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, caller number 8. Caller number 8, I want to give you an absolutely free copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. Again, what makes it unique is that it's totally readable for Christians who are not familiar with Jewish roots or Jewish background or anything like that. It's thoroughly readable, and yet you'll have words like Ruach for spirit. You'll have Ben Elohim for Son of God. You'll have Miriam for Mary. So you'll have these constant messianic sensitivities in the midst of it. And we do have a winner. Thank you so much. But we do have a winner. So thank you for calling. As you're reading it, you're reminded that here I am in Israel. This is where these things unfolded. This is where these things took place. And Ed, since you've got the mic there, when we looked out at Armageddon, when we looked out at the valley there, and a quote I hadn't heard before, that Napoleon saw it and said it's like the ultimate battlefield, something to that effect. I want to get the context of that because that was a fascinating quote. Was there a sense of nearness or greater reality when you looked out, or did you just see peaceful valleys and beautiful green herbage and things like that?
Well, it was a valley and it's beautiful, but just the scriptures came so alive to me for that valley, what it represented, where Gideon was, where Saul's sons and him, where they died. And all from the mountains off, you could see, you had the the valley of Armageddon, Medigo, but then you could see the mountain ranges in the back, and it just brought the scriptures so alive beyond that. And being there on top of the mountain where Elijah, you know, called out the priests of Baal, what an amazing place.
Yeah, Mount Carmel.
Yeah, Carmel. Yeah. But looking down from Mount Carmel over that valley, it was just so awesome.
Yeah, and you know, there is this sense that it's not just words on a page, that it's... It's not, look, the fact that the Jewish people have been scattered around the world, the fact that we have been without a homeland. Yes, there has always been a Jewish presence in the land, but for many centuries it was a small presence, and the vast, 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 vast majority of our people were outside the land, often under great persecution. And how is it that we were preserved? Because we're so tough? Because we're so strong? Because we have such amazing willpower? No, because of the purposes of God. That God said, even if we would be disciplined, even if we would be judged, we would still be kept. And I have not yet heard an answer to this challenge. Let me put it out again from the heart of Israel, from Jerusalem. Let me put out this challenge again. If, in fact, God scattered our people in judgment, if in fact we were scattered in judgment and sent to the nations, exile was always associated with judgment, then if God scattered us, no one could regather us. Again, if God blesses, no one can curse. If he curses, no one can bless. If he opens the door, no one can shut it. If he shuts the door, no one can open it. And yet, think of it, friends, God scattered us to the nations. The temple in Jerusalem was destroyed, and we have been preserved. And we have been regathered. 6 million Jews perished in the Holocaust. The Jewish population of Israel today is 6 million. And then about 20% addition to that is Arab Israeli. So we're not talking about the so-called occupied territories, not talking about the West Bank and Gaza. So how does this happen? How does this happen? If God didn't do it, who kept us? Who preserved us? You know, the church, I don't mean all the church, but some church leaders had this theology that as the church prospered and got established and built its monuments and its great buildings and the Jewish people were scattered and suffered, that was a sign of the triumph of Christianity. That was the sign of the truth of the gospel and the failure of Judaism and the sin of the Jewish people. But hang on, hang on. Now we've been regathered. Now we've been supernaturally protected in the midst of war. Now we have made it against all odds. And still, with world hatred against Israel, the nation continues to thrive in so many ways. We have been regathered. Who did it? It's the hand of God. And when you come here, you realize it is the hand of God. So regarding Napoleon, thanks for the quotes. Attributed to him, he said it was the most perfect battlefield in the whole world. Here's a direct quote. All the armies of the world could maneuver their forces on this vast plain. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yerushalayim, Jerusalem. That's where we are right now. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Coming away live from Jerusalem on this Memorial Day, we've got a few special days to spend here in and around Greater Jerusalem with our tour group. It is Memorial Day, according to Time.com. Memorial Day was originally called Decoration Day. It wasn't always celebrated the last Monday of May. It is legally required to observe a national moment of remembrance. James A. Garfield, President Garfield, delivered a rather lengthy speech at the first Memorial Day ceremony when it was called Decoration Day, May 30th, 1868. He addressed several thousand people gathered at Arlington National Cemetery and said, "If silence is ever gold, then it must be beside the graves of 15,000 men whose lives were more significant than speech and whose death was a poem, the music of which can never be sung." Several states observe Confederate Memorial Day. That's interesting to know. Waterloo, New York is considered the birthplace of Memorial Day, and more than 36 million people will travel at least 50 miles from home this Memorial Day. Those facts thanks to Time.com and my tireless, faithful producer, Matt, who sent them my way. During the break, I was just chatting with some of our tour group that came over with me to the radio studio where we're broadcasting from tonight, the studio here. And I asked if they had any questions, and I was asked a couple of questions, so I'm just going to respond to these questions here in Jerusalem. One was, how do I feel as a Jew in Israel? How do I feel when I'm in Israel as a Jew? I've been here a good number of times, always in ministry-related trips. This is the first time with a tour group. So the first part of the answer to the question is, it feels different with a whole group here because the focus is on everybody's experience together and what's happening. That may be off, by the way, if you want to say something, may be off. But anyway, so I'm conscious of what everyone is experiencing and how the trip is on their behalf. But normally when I'm here, I am overwhelmed with the Jewish part of my calling. I'm overwhelmed with the desire to reach my people. I want to spend all my time sitting and studying with religious Jews. I want to be praying at the wall, what Christians call the Wailing Wall, what Jews just call the Kotel, the Western Wall. I want to be immersing myself in relevant studies and reaching out and wish I could spend a lot more of my time here. I always experience that. There's this tremendous pull that is on me as a Jew being here, and especially with my call to help win the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And although every soul is precious to God, Gentile and Jew, precious to God, male, female, precious to God, young and old, precious to God, every different color and ethnicity, precious to God, there's not more joy in heaven when a Jew gets saved than a Gentile gets saved. The scripture says there's joy in heaven over one sinner who repents. There's not more joy over a religious Jew than a secular Jew. And yet, I'm especially thrilled to see religious Jews as they come to faith because of their devotion and because of the tradition and because of some of the challenges involved in reaching religious Jews with the gospel. And let me say this also, we're like-minded as much as they would oppose what I'm doing and look at me as an arch enemy. We were ministering in Israel one time, and there were ultra-Orthodox Israeli demonstrators, and they were outside the building where we were. In fact, I wanted to go right in the midst of them, but it wasn't wise because some of them would have been very agitated and upset with me. But they had signs, Hitler wanted our bodies, you want our souls. So there would be the mentality that what we're doing is more dangerous than what Hitler did. And that's how we'd be viewed. So there are those tremendous differences. And yet at the same time, we're like-minded in that we believe the words of Scripture are truly God's word. And we believe that the most important thing is pleasing Him and serving Him. And I believe that the great, great majority of them would die rather than be disloyal to their faith. This the same with me by God's grace. So in that sense, we're like-minded already. And that's where my heart beats ultimately. Another question I was asked was this. A Christian friend gets invited to a bat mitzvah. So you will not have these in the more religious Jewish settings that only have the bar mitzvah ceremony for the boy. But in more liberal Jewish settings, you have a bat mitzvah, a coming of age, for a Jewish young woman at 13. So a Christian friend is there, and at the end, they have bread and wine. Now, of course, a Christian sees bread and wine. We think blood of Jesus, body of Jesus. We think communion. That's what we think, the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper. How is that in common with Judaism? Is it something that Christianity introduced and Judaism took? No, remember at the Last Supper, which was a Passover meal, remember that there was bread and wine, and this is part of a festive Jewish meal. So on the Sabbath, in every religious Jewish home, there is special preparation of bread or buying of bread, and there is breaking of bread, and there is drinking of wine. So this is something that goes back further. It's not something that Yeshua introduced. What he introduced was that this represented his body and blood. That was the innovation. But this was something that was done regularly in Jewish homes, and that would be part of the Passover meal, and to this day is part of a Passover meal. And then in particular, the weekly basis, every Sabbath, the challah, the specially baked bread, and that's eaten. If you go to a Messianic congregation, that'll be done each week, the breaking of the bread and the drinking of the wine. We now see it with greater significance. So, of course, a Christian in that environment would think, whoa, that, you know what that stands for. But that's something that predates Yeshua, and it's just part of a special meal. All right, friends, I am out of time, but I want to encourage you to get behind Jewish ministry. Do you pray for the salvation of Jewish people? Do you pray that God would use our ministry and other ministries on the front lines of Jewish evangelism? Can I ask you, if you're a congregation, do you give directly to Jewish outreach? I hope you support missionaries around the world. I hope you're doing local outreach as well. But do you give and support Jewish ministry and Jewish outreach? If not, can I remind you that the gospel still is to the Jew first? And that just as through Jewish people, the gospel went to the Gentile world, so also it is now through the Gentile world that the gospel in many ways comes back to Israel. Partner with us, would you? If you become a Torchbearer, monthly supporter, I'm also sending you as a free gift, along with the other benefits that come your way every month, as a free gift, the Tree of Life version of the Messianic Bible. So go to our website right now. You can help with a one-time gift, or you can become a torchbearer. Go there, ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.com. askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on donate. Hey, Dennis, Dwight, Matt, thanks for helping us out this Memorial Day. Much appreciated. My bottom line today, everything we do is a team effort. Everything we do is a joint effort. By God's grace, we are on the front lines, but you are holding our hands up with your prayers.